Chapter 25.
Viridiana Savari?
Hearing her name made Vi skip to a stop in the crowded market. A dirty little man bobbed his head nervously. He extended a note toward her, but she didn't take it. He was being careful not to stand close to her, and he wasn't ogling her. So she guessed that he had an inkling of what she was. He smiled obsequiously, shot a look at her breasts, then stared stubbornly at his feet. "Who are you?" she asked.
"No one important, miss. Just a servant of our mutual master,"
he said, eyeing the crowd around them. Her heart turned to ice. No, it couldn't be. He extended the note again, and as soon as she took it, he disappeared into the crowd.
"Mulina," the note read. "We are curious indeed how you knew Jarl was going to Caernarvon, but that you did know tells us that you are indeed the best. We also desire that you deal with Kylar Stern. We prefer him alive. If this is not possible, we require his body and all belongings, no matter how trivial. Bring them immediately."
Vi closed the note. It was impossible that the God King knew where she was. Impossible that a note from him had beat her here. Impossible that Jarl could be here. Jarl, whose identity was supposed to be secret. Jarl, whom she'd been fleeing. Impossible to do what the God King asked. But the greatest impossibility was the only impossibility now. It was impossible to escape. Vi was the God King's slave. There was no way out. Somehow, Kylar had been roped into making the dinner for Uli's birthday. Aunt Mia had said no man should be intimidated by a kitchen, and Aline said that, compared to the potions he made, a dinner and dessert should be easy. And Uli just giggled as they put him in a frilly lace apron and dabbed his nose with flour. So, Kylar found himself with his sleeves rolled up, trying to figure out arcane cooking terms like blanching and roux and proofing. From Uli's giggles, he suspected they'd stuck him with the hardest recipe they could find. But he played along.
"What do I do after the jelly, weeps?" he asked.
Uli and Aline giggled. Kylar struck a pose with the spatula, and they laughed out loud. The door to the smithy opened, and Brayan walked in, dirty and smelly. He gave Kylar a flat look that made him lower the spatula, deflated, but he refused to wipe the flour from his nose. Brayan turned his eyes to Aline and looked her up and down.
"When's dinner?" he asked her.
"We'll bring it out to your cave when it's ready," Kylar said. Brayan grunted and told Aline,
"You ought to find yourself a real man."
"You know," Kylar said as Brayan shuffled back toward the smithy, "I know a wet boy who'd like to pay that cretin a visit."
"Kylar," Aline said. "I don't like the way he looks at you," Kylar said. "Has he tried anything with you?"
"Kylar, not tonight, all right?" Aline said, nodding toward Uli. He was suddenly aware of the ring box in his pocket. He nodded. Putting a serious look on his face, he attacked Uli, who squealed, and flipped her upside down and draped her over his shoulder. He pretended not to realize she was there as he went back to cooking. Uli yelped, kicking her legs and holding on to the back of his tunic with a death grip. Aunt Mia came into the kitchen, clucking,
"I can't believe it! We're all out of flour and honey."
"Oh, no," Kylar said. "How am I going to make the fifth mother sauce?" He set down his spatula and hunched over, extending his hands through his legs. On cue, Uli slid headfirst down his back and grabbed his hands in time for him to pull her through his legs. She landed on her feet, breathless and laughing.
"Isn't it someone's birthday today?" Kylar asked.
Mine! Mine!
Uli said. He pulled silver out of each of Uli's ears while she giggled. 2 silvers. It was a bonus the noble had given him. It left him and Aline with nothing again, but Uli was worth it. When he put them in Uli's hands, her eyes got big.
For me?
She asked, like she couldn't believe it. He winked. Aline will help you find something good, all right?
Can we go right now?
Uli asked. Kailar looked at Aline, who shrugged.
We can go with Aunt Mia, she said.
I've got to peel the peas anyway,
Kailar said. They snickered. He smiled at Aline and marveled again at how beautiful she was. He was so in love he thought his chest would burst. Uli pranced to the door and showed Aunt Mia her coins. Aline touched Kailar's arm.
Are we going to be all right?
She asked. After tonight we are, he said.
What do you mean?
You'll see. He didn't smile. He didn't want to give it away. If he smiled, he'd grin like a fool. He couldn't wait to see the look on her face. He couldn't wait for other things as well. He shook his head and went back to cooking. Contrary to what he'd said, the meal wasn't hard to prepare. It was just messy. He slipped off his ring and put it on the counter before he picked up the raw meat. There wasn't much romantic about smelling like dead cow. Aline and Uli and Aunt Mia had only been gone for about 30 seconds when there was a knock on the door. Kailar put down the spatula again and walked to the door.
What'd you forget this time, Uli? He said as he grabbed a hand towel and opened the door.
It was Jarl. Kailar felt like the wind had been knocked out of him. He couldn't believe his eyes. But there he was, lean, athletic, impeccably dressed, as beautiful a man as you'd ever see, his dazzling white teeth showing an uncertain smile.
Hey ho, Azo, he said.
Why that greeting? Was Jarl just being cute? Or was he also throwing in an appeal to their history together? Definitely the latter. For a long moment they just stood there, looking at one another. Jarl wasn't here for a visit. Jarl didn't visit. For the gods' sake, the man was the Shinga, a true Shinga, the leader of the most feared Sakage in Midcryu. How in the 9 hells did you find me, Jarl? Kailar said, being cute, too. It was what Jarl had expected Kailar to say the last time Jarl had shown up unexpectedly.
Aren't you going to invite me in?
Please, Kailar said. He put some utai on and sat across from Jarl, who helped himself to a seat by the window. Silence.
There's this job, Jarl began.
Not interested. Jarl took that in stride. He pursed his lips and looked around the humble room quizzically.
So, what is it about this that you like again?
Didn't Mama Kay teach tact?
I'm serious, Jarl said.
So am I. You show up after I tell you I'm out of the business, and the first thing you do is insult the place I live?
Logan's alive.
He's in the hole. Kailar just stared at him, uncomprehending. The words collided with each other and shattered on the floor, shards sparkling with the light of truth. But the hole, nothing more than the splinters, and points too sharp to touch.
All the wet boys are working for Kalidor. The resisting nobles have retreated to the Gyre estates. Several of the frontier garrisons are still manned, but we have no leader who can unite us. There's some trouble up in the Frieze that the God King is worried about, so he hasn't done anything to consolidate his power yet. He thinks that the noble families will tear each other apart. And if we don't have Logan...
He's right. Logan's alive? Kailar asked stupidly.
The God King has our former wet boys looking for me. It's part of why I came here. I had to get out of Cenaria until we could get word out that the Kage himself is protecting me.
No, Kylar said. Every day the chances that Logan will be discovered get worse. Apparently none of the prisoners in the hole has recognized him, but they've started throwing a lot of people down there. It might please you to know that Duke Vargon is one of them. Look at it as a little bonus. When you rescue Logan, you can kill that twist, too.
What?
Kylar said. Wheels were turning too fast for him to catch up.
Jarl, he said.
Tensor isn't Tensor Vargon, don't you see? He got himself thrown in the hole so he can do the hardest time there is. Then they produce the real Baron, alive, and Tensor is released. He comes to the Sakage a month later with a grudge for his false imprisonment and all the access of a duke, and what happens?
We take him in, Jarl said quietly. How could we resist?
And he destroys you, because he's not Tensor Vargon, Kylar said. He's Tensor Ursul. Jarl sat back, stunned. After a minute, he said, You see, Kylar? This is why I need you. Not just for your skills, for your mind. If Tensor's there right now, he's only going to wait long enough that his stay in the hole is credible. And then he'll tell his father that Logan's in there. We have to go now.
Now.
The ring box was burning against Kylar's leg. He looked through the open window as Jarl spoke, seeing the city he'd hoped would be his home for the rest of his life. He loved this city, loved the hope here, loved healing and helping, loved the simple pleasure of being praised for his potions. He loved Aline. She proved to him that he could do more good by healing than by killing. It all made sense. And yet, I can't, Kylar said. I'm sorry. Aline would never understand. Jarl rocked back on two legs of the chair. Don't get me wrong, Azo, because I grew up with Aline too, and I love the girl, but why do you give a shit what she thinks?
Fuck, Jarl!
Hey, I'm just saying. Then he let the question sit, his eyes never leaving Kylar's face.
The bastard.
He really had been studying under Mama Kay for all those years.
I love her.
Sure, that's part of it. Again, that I'm waiting stare.
She's good, Jarl. I mean, like people aren't good where we came from. Not good because it will get her something. Not good because people are watching. Just good. At first I thought she was just made that way, you know, like your skin is black and I'm devastatingly handsome.
Jarl raised an eyebrow. He didn't laugh.
But now I've seen that she has to work at it. And she does work at it. And she's been working at it for as long as I've been working at learning to kill people.
So she's a saint. Doesn't answer my question, Jarl said. Kylar was silent for a full minute. He rubbed the grain of the wood table with a fingernail.
Mama Kay used to say that we became the masks we wear. What's under the mask for us, Jarl?
Aline knows me in a way no one else does. I've changed my name, changed my identity, left everything and everyone I've ever known. I'm all lies, Jarl. But as long as Aline knows me, maybe there is a real me. You know what I mean?
You know, Jarl said, I was wrong about you. When you got yourself killed saving Aline and Uli, I thought you were a hero.
You're no hero. You just fucking hate yourself.
Excuse me?
You're a coward. So you've done bad stuff. Join the club. You know what? I'm glad you did. It made you something better than a saint.
A killer's better than a saint? What sort of fucked-up Sakage thinking is... It made you useful. Do you know what it's like in Sanaria right now? You wouldn't believe me. I didn't come here to find a killer. I came to find the killer. The Night Angel. The man who's more than just a wet boy, because the problems we have now are bigger than any wet boy could handle. There's only one man who could help us, Kylar, and that's you. Believe me, you weren't my first choice. He stopped abruptly. What's that supposed to mean? Jarl wouldn't meet his eyes. I didn't mean... What were you about to say? Kylar said in a dangerous tone. We had to be sure, Kylar. We were very respectful, I want you to know that. It was Mama Kay's idea. He used to be immortal, we had to make sure. You dug up my master's corpse? Kylar demanded. We put it... him... back just how you'd buried him, Jarl winced. It was maybe a week after the invasion. You dug him up while I was still in the city? We couldn't tell you beforehand, and afterward, there was no reason to. Mama Kay said the body would be there, that Durzo had given his immortality to you. But when she saw him... It was the scariest thing I've ever seen, Kylar. I mean, I was practically raised by the woman, and I've never seen her like that. Hysterical, weeping and screaming. Here we are, in the middle of the cloudy night. We'd paddled out to Voss Island with oars wrapped in wool. And she starts wailing. Out of her mind. I was so sure a patrol would come that I wanted to get off the island immediately. But she wouldn't leave until he was just how you left him. Like Kylar cared that Durzo be left on that damned rock. If they were going to dig him up, they could have at least brought him... Where? Home? What home did Durzo Blint ever have? How'd he look? Kylar asked quietly. Shit. He looked like he'd been in the ground for a week. What do you think? Of course he did. Damn it, Master Blint. Why'd you give me your immortality? Were you just sick of living? Why didn't you tell me anything? But then, maybe he had told him, in the note he'd given Kylar, the note that had been soaked with blood, illegible. You want me to break into the hole and save Logan? Do you know who the God King keeps as his concubines? Young girls from noble families. Prefers virgins. He guesses how much humiliation and debasement each girl can take. Puts them in tower rooms with balconies, where all the railings have been torn off so the jump beckons every day. It's a game for fun. Kylar kept his voice hard. Get to the point. He took Syrah and Mags Drake. Syrah killed herself in the first week. Mags is still there. Syrah and Mags were practically Kylar's sisters. Mags had always been his pal, always quick with a laugh, always smiling. He'd been so self-absorbed since the coup that he'd barely thought of them. Jarl said, I want you to rescue Logan. And then I want you to assassinate the God King. Is that all? Coldly amused. It was a tone Kylar had heard Durzo use 100 times. Let me guess. Logan first, because my odds with the God King aren't so great. That's right, Jarl said angrily. That's how I have to think, Kylar. I'm fighting a war, and people better than us are dying in it every day, and you're sitting around because of what some girl thinks? Don't you talk about Aline. Or what? You'll breathe heavily on me? You're a dumbass who swore off violence. Yes, I know about that. And let me tell you something. Roth made a lot of people miserable. I'm glad you killed him, all right? He fucked me up bad. But he doesn't hold a candle to his father. Jarl swore. Look at yourself. I know this hit is impossible. I'm sending you after a god. But if anyone in the world can do it, it's you. You were made for this, Kylar. Do you think you made it through all the shit you made it through so you can sell hangover potions? Some things are better than your happiness, Kylar. You can give hope to an entire nation.
It'll cost me everything,
Kylar whispered. His face was gray.
You're an immortal. There'll be other girls.
Kylar gave him a disgusted look. Jarl's expression changed instantly.
I'm sorry.
I guess there will be other god kings and other Shingas too. I just...
We need you. Logan will die if you don't come. So will Mags. And so will a lot of other people you'll never know.
It would have been easier if he disagreed with anything Jarl said.
Kylar had asked Mama Kay, "Can a man change?"
Here was his answer, and it sucked the life right out of him. All right, Kylar said. I'll take the contract.
Jarl smiled.
It's good to have you back, my friend.
It's bad to be back.
I didn't want to say it before, but have you done something to piss off the local Shinga?
Jarl asked.
He took Kylar's expression to be an admission.
Because one of my sources told me the Shinga put out a contract on a Cenarian wet boy. He didn't know any details, but, I don't figure there's all that many Cenarian wet boys hanging around.
The longer you're here, the more you put Aline and Uli in danger.
Durzo had taught Kylar that the best way to cancel a contract was to cancel the contract giver. For Aline and Uli and Aunt Mia and even Brayan to be safe, Baruch Sniggle had to die.
Kylar stood woodenly and went upstairs. He returned a minute later with a visage as dark as the wet boy grays he wore once again.
Vi looked at the bow in her hands, trying to convince herself to pull back the red and black arrow. She was on a rooftop, looking into the midwife's home. She'd been there for an hour. Her back was to a chimney, and she'd wrapped herself in shadows. She wasn't invisible by any means, but crouched low in the dying light with the sun behind her. She was close enough. She'd come to Caernarvon to escape this. She'd thought the only way not to kill Jarl and still escape the God King's wrath was to kill Kylar. In the time she was away, Jarl would flee or be killed by another wet boy.
How could he have come here?
She wanted to shoot past him. Shoot Kylar and pretend that Jarl wasn't here. Pretend that she'd never gotten the note. But she didn't have the shot to take Kylar down, and lies would go nowhere with the God King. Jarl sat right in front of the window. The window was even open. Vi was using a talent tension bow, a bow so powerful that only a person with the talent could draw it. So the red and black traitor's arrow could have punched right through a window, through shutters for that matter. But she didn't even need it. Jarl sat there, utterly exposed. He never would have made such a mistake in Cenaria, but here he felt safe. He'd fled straight into death's arms. Yet she waited. Damn Jarl for his stupidity. If Vi didn't kill him, the God King would know. He would find her. Damn you, Jarl! Damn you for your kindness!
Finish the job.
Hugh Gibbet liked to torture his debtors first, but he only did it when he was sure he wouldn't be interrupted. Hugh Gibbet always finished the job. The perfect shot never comes. Take any shot that kills. Cursing under her breath to activate her talent, Vi stood and drew the arrow to her cheek. It moved her out of the silhouette of the small chimney into the dying light. She was shaking, but it was barely 30 paces.
Damn you, Jarl. Just move, she said.
She could run away. In Gandu or Ymir, the God King would never find her.
Would he?
She couldn't believe it. She had told no one she was coming here, left no sign, and yet he knew. If she fled, the God King would send her master after her, and Hugh Gibbet never failed. For everything that Vi's beauty accomplished for her, the one thing it made nearly impossible was hiding. She'd never worried about disguises. She'd never thought of it as a weakness. Until now.
Come on, Kylar, she whispered. Just walk in front of the window. Just once.
She was shaking violently now, and not just from the talent burning in her, not just from the tension of holding the bow drawn for so long. Why did she want Kylar dead so badly? She saw a leg dressed in wet boy grays, but no more appeared.
Damn it!
If Kylar was going out, she was in serious trouble. She'd heard that he could make himself invisible, but that was just the typical wet boy lies. They all bragged about their abilities so they could drive prices up. Everyone wanted to be another Durzo Blint. But this was Durzo's apprentice, the man who'd killed Durzo. Fear gripped her. Jarl's face was drawn with compassion, sorrow. At that look she'd seen before when Jarl had taken care of her, after Hugh Gibbet came in to test the new skills Mama Kay had been teaching her, and found her lacking, and beat her senseless, and violated her every way he could imagine. At that look, Vi's vision went blurry. She blinked and blinked, refusing to believe it was tears. She hadn't cried since that night, since Jarl had held her, rocking her, helping her put the fractured pieces of herself back together. Jarl stood and walked to the window. He lifted his eyes and saw Vi, her dark silhouette limned with sunlight. Surprise lit his eyes, and as it was followed by recognition, what other wet boy had a woman's silhouette? She could swear she saw her name on his lips. Her fingers went limp, and the bowstring slipped. The red and black traitor's arrow leapt across the narrowest of chasms, the distance between a wet boy and her deader. It cut a red path through the air, as if the night itself were bleeding.